Chapter 9. An Address by Beloved Mary, Mother of Jesus, November 26, 1954. On Importance and Benefits of Group Activities. Joy of Meeting Jesus on Resurrection Morning. Return of Jesus to Mary, John, and Disciples after Resurrection. Establishing of Focus of Light, which became foundation of Christian era. Beloved ones, do you know what it means to a city to be given the opportunity of 4 successive visitations? Also, do you know what it means to give to me the opportunity to draw from the energies of my world and from those temples of the Sacred Heart where I serve, those cosmic currents of life and light eternal? Through your force field, these can then energize the mental and feeling worlds of all the people in this great metropolis, as well as their physical bodies and the etheric garments. At Lourdes, as well as at Fatima, there were visitations, but we were able to say very little, since we dealt with the consciousness of children who could not grasp the deeper law and who were not prepared and ready to understand more than the beauty of the actual visible presence. Yet, through these visitations, we were able to anchor into those localities a sufficient cosmic current which has remained to this day and has made possible the healing and the freeing of life streams that have been encompassed for centuries in limitations of their own making. It is time, then, that you who are entrusted with our confidence, with our very presence, and with our instruction, should accept in the deepest recesses of your feeling those currents of energy which we bring with us and leave as a permanent river of living force. This surges forth from the heart center of the established force field, and with a far greater efficacy than the thin stream of energy we have been able to draw forth at the healing shrines. It can be directed into your hospitals and asylums, into your homes, and into the consciousness of your people everywhere. Can you realize for a moment the intelligence that is within energy and the power of magnetization that is within your heart? I would like you to think of it for a moment. Within your heart is a magnet. And that magnet sustains life within your physical body for as long as your Holy Christ self desires to have manifestations in this world. A constant flowing stream of electrons from the great source of all life flows into your heart with such rapidity that there is no outer means by which it can be photographed as yet, so you might see your own silver cord. However, in the near future, there is coming a much greater sensitivity in the photographic world, and many of the magnificent things of which we have spoken will be recorded and confirmed to the sight of man. This stream of living light that pours from your electronic presence into your heart is what you have lightly called your life stream. It is exactly that, a river of living, breathing force and intelligence. It is primal life, unqualified, awaiting the command of man's free will to become for him and everyone whatever he shall decide to make it. This primal life is already qualified to obey. It is the elemental substance that has taken the command from the universal to obey the creative principle of man, and out of that primal life you have woven your chains and your limitations, even as you have woven the glory of your causal body. You have also woven the magnificent momentums upon which we depend to draw mankind again out of the pit into the glory and the victory of their own God-free estate. As this life flows through you, it is yours to command. For the most part, according to the caprice of the moment, your thoughts and feelings qualify it, and the invisible inner garments which you wear, your sphere of influence, your aura, and your causal body are a conglomerate mass of the thoughts and feelings of your daily life. Many men have come under the influence of evil. Conversely, many other men and women have come under the influence of a good man or a saintly person, and on the impetus of that one individual's magnetized and qualified life, have lived a holy life themselves. In time, they returned to their God estate. Your individual sphere of influence is important, more important than you realize. Some of you, humble of heart and sweet of spirit, feel that the individual self matters little, but your sphere of influence and your radiation are all we have with which to work in this world of form. The quality of your sphere of influence can be changed by your conscious application and the conscious qualifying of this beautiful primal light through your feeling world. Then the hem of your spiritual garment becomes an influence for good wherever you move among mankind. Even though you never used your lips to speak at all, just the radiation passing out from your body becomes a healing, raising power, and you become the leaven in the loaf. Now, as you join together in a constructive activity, what happens? All of your individual life streams combine, drawing rivers of life flowing from the presence. All of them join together and descending make a great, mighty river of force, magnetized by the heartbeat of each one of you who chooses to come to these magnificent classes and give of your energy. Then, as you make invocation to the great masters of light, and speak their holy names in word, in song, even in silent visualization, your magnetic heartbeat draws around the river of force made up of all those who are within the room, a tremendous current from each great being whom you drew by thought and feeling. It is exactly as if a little rivulet that had trickled down from the mountaintop by the very first melting of the snow was caught up then in the great, mighty rush of the mountain torrents when the glaciers melt. That tremendous added impetus then sweeps down into the valley, carrying the currents of energy and fertilization to the plain. The magnetic power within a group of unascended beings to form an open door to the ascended master's realm cannot be overemphasized. Beloved Jesus said, "Where two or three are gathered together in my name or nature, there I am in the midst of them." Every group of dedicated life streams, whether they are orthodox, metaphysical, occult, or spiritualistic, who are sincere and deep in their desire to draw forth greater good from the heart of the universal, magnetizes and draws these cosmic currents from these glorious beings. Those currents then flood out from the center of the force fields, north, east, south, and west. According to the intensity and power of the group, the feeling and sincerity of the leader, according to the energy that is released and the power of concentration among the assembly, is mankind blessed cosmically and bathed in that radiation of purifying essence. Your individual sphere of influence, your individual aura, is a conglomerate mass of good and evil. When you join together to form the force field for a cosmic activity, for the radiation of the ascended masters, and for the magnetization of the angelic host, the portion of your personal sphere of influence that is not constructive is muted for the moment. The portion which is constructively qualified is emphasized, and the great angel divas and builders of form together weave from the assembly a magnificent pattern. That pattern conducts the blessings of the group and the blessings of the beings who gather in the atmosphere above the meeting place, back into your homes, into your blessed families, into your worlds, and into the consciousness of those who need such assistance. Beloved children, in my position, I hear so many calls for help. If you knew the prayers that come up to me from this metropolis alone, you would realize how grateful I am to be given this open door and opportunity to bring to your great city this gift of my energy, my life, the river of light which comes from my presence. To these are added the blessings of the beloved Jesus and of the beloved angelic host who work with me. We direct those currents through your force field and then allow that to bless and bless and bless life everywhere. Each one of you who has come and given of your own life to make this opportunity possible, each one of you is dear to my heart, and my gratitude shall flow to you eternally. Will you please remember each evening to consciously direct back into your own city, your own sanctuary, and your own home, a mighty ray of intelligent life and light substance from this class? This ray of light substance can duplicate there the same activity which we draw forth here and make it active in those portions of the country from whence you have come. You see, as much as you will personally do for yourselves, you spare me in the use of my energy. Then my service can be given you in more powerful currents for the purification of your inner and flesh bodies. Will you do something for me tonight? Will you please accept the presence of my humble self in your midst with at least as much faith as the pilgrims at Lourdes? Will you accept deep within your heart that healing momentum which has become the hem of my garment? That garment covers this entire building tonight, and each one will take as much or as little as he or she may choose, according to the power of his or her acceptance. As my gift of thanksgiving to you, accept the substance of the radiation of one who has been your mother for countless centuries. Accept this into your blessed minds, your bodies, and your worlds. Then, beloved children, as your gift to the beloved Jesus this holy season, will you specialize in drawing forth some particular quality to become the spiritual garment which you wear? You can charge your glorious tube of light with a particular essence, so that as you move through the great metropolis, as you rub elbows with mankind, some of the virtue consciously drawn forth by yourself may be absorbed by them. Then the hem of your spiritual garment will be a blessing and an uplifting power to life everywhere. This would be the greatest of the gifts of the season to one who gave of himself so long ago. Now, turning my attention and yours back to those early years, let us pursue that sweet story of a long-ago era. It still lives in my heart, as though it were yesterday, and lives in many of yours, too. Many within this room were part of that drama, part of that joy and part of the heartache. You were part of the despair of Calvary and part of the glory of the resurrection morning. Deep within your etheric bodies, there vibrates the memories of a majestic being who walked across Judea and left an example for all mankind that has never been equaled, even down to this present day. Now we come to celebrate his birthday, and it is for him that we prepare our physical and inner bodies to give him the gift of our very selves, even as I gave myself to him before I passed through the gates of birth, before I was to know physical embodiment. When the initiation was complete at the close of the 3 hours on Calvary's hillside, the beloved John and I walked together down that hill, as I told you, leaving the others to perform the final rites, preparing the body for entombment. We returned to Bethany, to that blessed Bethany where Jesus and the disciples and I had spent the few private moments of his ministry. Here the garden smelled sweet in that spring, the birds sang beautifully, and there was no great press of the public, no tremendous need and pressure. There, in the quiet of that place, I asked the beloved John to leave me in the privacy of my own room 2 nights and 1 day. I was given fresh water and fruit, and closing the door, I sank to my knees in the deepest, most heartfelt prayer. In that prayer, I followed the soul and spirit of the beloved Jesus through those hours until we would be assured that the resurrection was accomplished. At Luxor, years before, both Jesus and I had taken the initiation of the suspension of the breath and the so-called removal of life from the body. We had passed through this initiation victoriously. However, as I have told you, it is one thing to accomplish that initiation in the protection of a retreat where the ascension flame blazes bright and strong, the cosmic masters and the hierarch standing guard over the body. Here there is no breath of evil, and there is the vital fire of life and confidence. Here the 12 masters who stand watch over the body during that period have already mastered the initiation themselves, and they know that law is law. They have the confidence, faith, and conviction which comes alone when you know the exactness of the law through the use of your own life energy. It is quite another thing indeed to accomplish such a mission amidst a roaring mob, a mass mind and consciousness which embodied all of the viciousness of the astral and psychic realms, determined to destroy the greatest manifestation of the Christ in that era. It is a different thing, too, to reanimate a body that has been broken. It was for this that I prayed. I prayed and prayed those long hours through. Finally, it seemed as though I had fallen asleep at my vigil. Then through my mind came the most magnificent, melodious voice of Gabriel, whom I knew so well. I thought that I was again dreaming of that first visitation. I would recall those words so often during the early years in Egypt, during Jesus' growing years, during the years of obscurity in Nazareth, those words of Gabriel and that confirmation of Jesus' messiahship would come to my mind over and over again. So that morning, as I waited in my lonely vigil, again I heard Gabriel's voice say, "Hail Mary, full of grace." Oh, I thought, again I am recalling from memory the words of that blessed one. However, the words changed then, and he said, "Beloved, your son is risen. He is victorious. The tomb has been shattered. He inhabits his body, and I come, the announcer, the protector of the Immaculate Concept, to bring to you the first word of the victory." Then I fell to my knees, and the tears of gratitude streamed down my face. The room was filled with light and the fragrance of the lily. The magnificent presence of Gabriel stood there before me, and as the brilliant light in the room softened, there also stood my son, clothed in the same white robe that I had woven for him. At great moments, you know how the little things magnify? For instance, the ticking of a clock in your day. In mine, I kept tracing my own stitching in the hem of his garment, and I looked, as a mother would look, at the line and contour of his face. I looked at the delicately arched eyebrows, the beautiful deep-set eyes, and I said within myself, "No, my hope has not conjured up this image. It is not the result of my wishful thinking." Then Jesus reached out his hands and spoke to me, saying, "Mother, it is I." I rushed toward him, thinking to kiss the hem of his robe, but he raised me to my feet. We walked over to the window together to see the sun, the great symbol of life and light which we had worshipped and loved as an outer manifestation of God the Father and the Holy Mother. Jesus remarked about the beauty of the morning, but my eyes were so wet with tears I could scarcely see the light of the sun. I looked upon his hand and saw that there was yet the stigmata, the mark of the nails. I said, "Son, in the resuscitation, why have you left this imperfection on your hands?" "Mother," said Jesus, "for authenticity's sake. Not everyone has the discerning eye of a mother and would know me by the line of my cheekbone, the length of my hand, or by the light in my eye. Those who know have said, 'Wear yet the marks upon your hands and feet until you have come to your disciples and those who love you.' However, we shall remedy this in time." I said, "Thank God, at least the deep marks of the thorns in your forehead are gone." He just smiled. Then, as time was fleeting, Jesus said, "I must be upon my way, beloved. I must now go to the disciples. To Mary, Martha, and Magdalene, to Peter, James, and John, for they are still sore afraid, and the sight of death has shaken them to their roots." Before leaving, however, Jesus asked me, "Beloved Mother, do you wish to come with me when I go into my glory, or will you remain yet a while?" "Son," I answered him, "what is thy will?" He said, Mother, the magnetizing of the great and mighty cosmic currents for the Christian dispensation can only be done by an unascended being. There is much yet that I can do, and a dispensation has been offered me, that after my public ascension I may come to you and to John for 30 years, giving you instruction that has not yet been written, if I can call upon you for that sacrifice. Behold, the handmaiden of the Lord, I said, willingly, joyously, beloved, if it were 1,000 years, I would stay. I, who have lived these 33 years to see your victory, should I not now allow you the greater opportunity for a few years of exile on my part? He was pleased. Jesus then said, go to the granary, and I will send Peter, James, Andrew, John, and Luke, and I will send the ladies who have loved us. For 40 days we shall visit together, and I will give you some understanding of the law. Then, after the completion of my mission, I shall be enabled to appear to John and you alone. One of you must remain at Bethany until this period is completed. This is why John remained at home when we went to England, in order to hold that vigil and to make possible that magnetization. This was the same sort of activity of which I have spoken to you concerning your great constancy of application and group work together. We went out then to this old grist mill. A stream of water flowed behind it, and it was very peaceful, very quiet there. First they fixed a small room for me inside the mill. Soon the beloved Jesus came, and he was always a practical man. I have spoken little about that practical side of my son, but I remember well. As he looked at the stream, he called Andrew and James and said, if you will dig a ditch here, you can irrigate Mother's garden and save all the steps of carrying water for her. I was interested at that time in herbs, and I made a lovely garden of them. Those herbs had much healing power and did great work. Another day, as we were standing together, Jesus said to Peter, Peter, this main room is too big. The roof beam will not hold unless you get a large tree to support it. If you will get such a tree and hew it, I will smooth it and we will place it in the center of your assembly room. So we did. In such homely ways as this did we make our 40 days count. We were preparing for the separation, and during this time Jesus told us much of the spiritual law and many of the glorious experiences he had while he was free from the body as it lay in the tomb. On the hillside, Mark kept the small flock of sheep which Joseph of Arimathea sent us so we might weave the garments for the men from the wool. The lovely wife of Pilate sent us some imported milking goats and a letter asking if she might come to visit us. The friends of Judas Iscariot and his family asked if they might give us 40 fruit trees, fig and olive. We gratefully accepted and planted them. So we lived in simplicity. In the evenings we would gather together, and I would go over the story of the Nativity. Then Matthew, Mark, and John would tell the story in their own words and record it. Sometimes I would have to say, no, that is not exactly the way it happened, and we would correct it. Thus we wrote the Gospels together. Finally we came to the end of that period when we had the sweetness of Jesus' presence so close. The night before the ascension he spoke to us and said to John and me, tomorrow at dawn I shall climb the hill of Bethany alone. You come with Peter and James around 9 o'clock and let the others follow. Jesus said to John, even though you were not at Luxor, yet because of your love and your fidelity, and because you shall care for my mother and my flock, you shall have your ascension at the close of this life. The early morning came, and Jesus walked alone up the hill. He was like a magnet, which was of love alone. His presence, his sweet voice, his shining hair, his aura, all these were so powerfully magnetic that wherever he was, even if people were sleeping, they stirred, rose, and followed him. On this morning I spoke to the boys and said, Watch now that the flock do not follow him. Let us allow him these few hours, the last hours which he will know alone as a part of the earth. Let him commune with Virgo and Aries, beloved Helios and Vesta. Let him adore beloved May, the month of perfection. Sure enough, no sooner had his presence started up the hill than there followed the beloved who wished to be with him. We restrained them, and in order to keep them happy, I told them some stories from his life. Around 9 o'clock, the remaining disciples and myself ascended the hill. The presence of beloved Jesus was already brilliant and shining like a sun. So bright was the light shining through his body, we could scarcely look upon it. He spoke no more with us then. We just continued to pray with him, drawing the resurrection and ascension flames. Then, on that majestic hilltop, from the very rock where I had spent so many years in prayer, Jesus ascended consciously in the visible presence of hundreds of people, about 500 in all. After that, Jesus came once each day for quite a while, and John and I recorded what he said, much as you receive our words now. Later, Saul of Tarsus came to live with us and had a period of recuperation, endeavoring to regain his balance and his good eyesight. Many a time Peter and he sat in the garden and talked. Saul, endeavoring to become so humble, yet had such a background of the law under the old dispensation that it was difficult for him to accept the faith of this unlettered Peter. Many a time I came between them to settle an argument. James, Peter, and Andrew particularly went forth and taught. Many came from the Romans, many from the Jewish faith, and many came from the Gentiles. All that time we builded the radiation which was to be the heritage of the Christian dispensation. Finally, one day there came a messenger from Joseph of Arimathea that his business was taking him to the Isles of Britain. We knew that we had a mission to accomplish, to take the cup, the Holy Grail there, and that story I shall give you tomorrow. Remembering again the sweetness and simplicity of our life together, and sharing it with you becomes my gift to you, beloved of my heart. Your homely daily living is building for you and for Saint Germain the same magnetized field for tomorrow's world. Good evening, and God bless you.